Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 13 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. The Essential Tennis Podcast is here for everybody who loves tennis. It's the only tennis podcast that is dedicated to instruction, asking questions from its listeners. Here at the Essential Tennis Podcast, people are welcome to ask and then learn and then improve their game. So through the asking of specific questions and through those answers, armed with the good information, listeners of the podcast are able to increase the levels of their game and become better players. I'm having a great time helping you guys improve, and it's really exciting hearing back from everybody whose games are becoming better just through listening to the podcast. A couple quick things before we get to our questions today. First of all, thank you to everybody who wrote in comments about Dr. Jack last week on episode number 12. I am going to have him back on the show. So if you have any questions having to do with sports medicine, whether it be injuries or nutrition, hydration, anything of that kind of nature, maybe weightlifting and strengthening a certain part of the body, definitely write me your question so that I have a couple to ask him next time he's on the show. I think I already have one or two for the next time he's a guest, but would definitely like to have a couple more. So write me your sports medicine questions for Dr. Jack. And I'm looking forward to having him back on the show, possibly next week. So if you'd like him to answer your question, please head on over to EssentialTennis.com, go to the feedback page, and leave me a question for him using the form on that page. Also, if you're listening and you would like your tennis-specific question to be answered, whether it be on technique or strategy, the mental game, or on equipment, please also head on over to Essential Tennis and let me know what your question is, and you can become part of the podcast. Okay, let's go ahead and get right into the questions for today. Our first question comes to us from Lisa in Maryland, and she's a 3.0 player. She writes and says, "Ian, I have a question about the backhand volley. I started with a two-handed backhand volley. I switched to a one-handed because I wanted more reach and wanted to be able to hit the high volleys without the ball going into the net. My problem is that sometimes I pop the ball up or just don't get a firm hit on it, causing it to go into the net. I have a two-handed backhand and can do a fair one-handed slice. I know the one-handed backhand volley will be better for me in the long run. It's just frustrating when I can't put it away. Any advice?" Well, sure, Lisa, definitely. First of all, I agree with you that the one-handed backhand volley is going to be better in the long run. And I very often tell that to people. And there's nothing wrong with starting off with a two-handed backhand volley. Oftentimes for beginners just starting off to learn, starting with a one-handed backhand volley feels very weak and uncomfortable. And so starting with two is perfectly fine. However, if at all possible, I like to start people off with a one-hander because, as you say, there's more reach. And when you're at the net and there's not a lot of time, reach is pretty important to get your racket on as many volleys as possible. So you're on the right track. I'm glad that you've switched to one, and it's going to be worth your while to learn how to hit it well. Now, back to your questions, I'm going to break these up into two main groups here. First of all, I'm going to talk about how to make that one-handed backhand volley stronger. And the first thing I want to suggest to you is to make your contact point a little bit farther in front. With a two-handed backhand volley, you're going to be making contact kind of even with the center of your body or maybe even with the front edge of your body at the farthest. And with a one-handed backhand volley, your contact point should be farther in front of you than that. So it's very possible, since you don't feel strong yet, that you're using the same contact point that you did when you were hitting with two hands. And so I want you to make sure, you know, it's possible you already have adjusted for this and your contact point is farther in front, but I want you to, next time you go out and play, I want you to pay attention to this and see where your contact point is. You should be making contact with your racket in front of the front edge of your body, maybe even with the front edge of your body at the farthest back. You shouldn't be making contact into your stance, meaning when you turn to the left and take your racket in front and get ready to make contact, you should not be making contact inside the front edge of your body, which would be the right side of your body. So your contact point should not be inside the right edge of your body. It should be at the right edge of your body or a little bit farther in front than that. See what feels most comfortable to you, but it should be in front of your body. Secondly, make sure to hit a firmer volley, to hit a stronger backhand volley. Make sure that your shoulder is doing most of the work. A lot of people think that hitting a strong volley means accelerating the racket using their forearm and their hand. On your backhand side, when you're using one hand, your forearm and your hand are not going to be strong enough, unless you take a big swing, which I do not want you to do, they're not going to be strong enough to hit a firm volley. So you're going to have to use more of your core and more of your shoulder. The first thing you should do when you see the ball coming to your backhand side is make a good turn with your body. Start in a ready position with your racket in front of you. Then you should be making about a 45-degree turn with your core as a whole. Your whole body should turn to the left. I'm assuming you're right-handed. And you should be making about a 45-degree angle between you and the plane of the net. So you're making about an eighth of a turn. A quarter of a full turn, meaning a circle with your body, would be you facing straight to the left, facing the left fence of the court or the left backdrop or curtain. I want you to make about an eighth of a turn to the left so that your body is turned, and then you're going to use your right shoulder, the outside of your shoulder, to pull the racket into contact. I don't want you to use your hand and your forearm to try to accelerate and hit the ball because they're just not going to be strong enough. Your forearm and your hand can help your shoulder make contact, but you should be using your shoulder to move the racket towards the ball on plane with your target, out towards your target. So, in terms of hitting a stronger, more solid feeling volley, make sure your contact point is a little farther in front than your two-handed was, and make sure that you're using your shoulder and your core to rotate and pull the racket forwards into contact. Make sure you're not using your hand and your forearm to hit the ball. Now, lastly, we're going to talk about placement of your volley. You say that you've had frustrations hitting the ball into the net or popping it up. And I want to make sure that you understand that whether the ball pops up or whether it goes into the net is a function of the racket face, your strains. Whatever the angle of your strains are when you make contact, that's going to determine the path of the ball. So whether or not you pop the ball up is not a matter of a one-handed backhand volley or a two-handed backhand volley. It's going to have to do with how you control your racket face at contact. Now, your racket face should be open when you make contact, unless you're right up next to the net and the ball is high above the height of the net, and you can actually turn your racket down and face it towards your opponent's side, which happens, but not extremely commonly. Most of your volleys are going to be hit a little bit farther back, like around the service line or maybe halfway between the service line and the net. And most of your volleys are going to be making contact with them around waist height or maybe a little bit higher than that. It's obviously going to vary. And depending on where your contact is, that's going to determine how open your face needs to be. Usually your face should be open so that the ball can make it up and get over to the other side of the court. Now, if the ball pops up more than you wanted, it means your face was too open. And so you have to pay close attention to what you're doing with the racket face so that you can get the desired shot. You need the ball to get over to the other side, so the face does have to be open, but you don't want it so open that it not only goes over the net, but goes well up into the air past that, so that it sits up and it's easy for your opponents to put away. So it takes good touch and good hands and good awareness to be a good volleyer. You have to control the racket face and put it in the right spot so that you can hit the right kind of trajectory with the ball. Now, if you're trying to hit a more aggressive volley, your face will be more closed. So if you're closer to the net and the ball is higher, you can close your face more as compared to a volley where you're farther away and the ball is lower. So your job is to find the correct racket face to fit where you are in the court and the type of volley you're trying to hit. It's not going to be the same on every volley, and it's your job to, through experience, learn where your racket face needs to be for each individual shot. Lastly, I just want to say, don't worry if you can't put it away with power right away. It's a hard shot. It's a difficult shot to hit aggressively. So I would definitely focus more on placement right now, focus on consistency, and just getting it to feel comfortable in general. Don't go out there and expect to be hitting powerful, you know, put away volleys. I want you to work on your placement, your consistency, and controlling the height and the depth of your shots. As you get better and better at that, you can start adding a little bit more strength here and there to work on putting the ball away more effectively. But for right now, just placing the ball well is what I want you to focus on. All right, Lisa, hopefully that answers your question. I like volleys a lot. They're definitely some of my favorite shots. And it takes a lot of touch and control to be a good volleyer. So get out there, keep on practicing. I'm glad you've switched to one hand. If I can help you at all with anything else, please don't hesitate to let me know. Okay, our next question comes from Sally. She writes and says, in doubles, I don't think I'm timing my split step right when I come into the net after my serve or return of serve. I tend to shuffle my feet and feel off balanced when I hit my first volley, sometimes shuffling and running through it. Can you talk about split step timing? Thanks again for the book, Sally. All right, Sally, good question. I actually wrote a good blog article about this a couple weeks back. So if you'd like any further explanation after I've answered your question today, head on over to the blog at EssentialTennis.com, and it's in the archives there. Now, you said something smart in your email. You said, can you talk about split step timing? And that's exactly right. When you split step is a point in time, not a place on the court. We'll get to that in a second. First of all, the goal of your split step is to be in balance as your opponent hits their shots. Whenever your opponent makes contact with each individual shot, high-level players always make a split step to balance their body in preparation to have to move to get that shot. So if you watch the pros on TV, they're making a split step every time their opponent hits the ball, most of the time. If it's an extreme situation where they're way off the court, sometimes they won't, if they just have to move in a certain direction. But all things being equal, you're going to see them make a split step as their opponent hits each and every shot. Go and watch a match on TV and just watch one player. Don't watch the ball, but watch one player move their feet. And you'll see lots of steps, first of all, and you'll see a split step to prepare them for each and every shot. And as you say in your email, the whole key here is balance. If you feel off balance hitting your first volley, then we definitely do need to work on this. Now, as I said a minute ago, a good split step is not a matter of where, but it's a matter of when. You should be making your split step just before your opponent makes contact with their shot, so that as they make contact, you are landing in your split step, you're balanced, you're ready to move in any direction as they make contact. So that's the timing of it. Now that means that you may not get as far into the net as you're used to. Typically when I'm playing doubles and I'm hitting my serve, I'm making contact with my serve and taking two, maybe three steps before I make my split step as my opponent is hitting his return of my serve. And that means I'm usually split stepping a little bit behind the service line. And then after he makes contact, I'm continuing to move in towards the ball after having balanced myself to move there quickly. Now, as far as technique goes, you should be making your split step with your feet both wider than your shoulders. So your feet should be a little bit more than shoulder width apart. For myself, I find that the wider my feet go, the better. I'm in a wider stance, I'm in better balance, and it's easier for me to push off in one direction or the other to go left or right. So make sure that you're dropping into a nice wide stance with your feet at least shoulder width apart, if not a little bit wider than shoulder width. And lastly, your weight should be balanced slightly forwards. The purpose of a split step is not to stop. So you don't want your weight to be flat on your feet when you drop in your split step. You want your weight to be balanced a little bit forwards, and you should be on the balls of your feet, so you're leaning forwards. And the reason for that is you want to be moving immediately after you've made your split step. So you should be landing in your split step, ideally right as your opponent makes contact. And then as soon as they've made contact and you identify where the ball is going, hopefully your weight is going forwards a little bit so that you can immediately start moving to your next step out towards the direction that the ball is coming in. So in terms of right and left, your feet should be wide to make sure that you can push off either way. In terms of up and back, I want your weight to be slightly forwards and on the balls of your feet, so that after your opponent has made contact with their return, you can fall forwards into the court, take your next step, and push off towards the direction you're going to have to move to get to the ball. Now, if your opponent commonly lobs, then you might not want to balance your weight forwards quite so much. If they're consistently hitting a drive return, you definitely want to be leaning forwards a little bit so that you can go out towards the ball and hopefully take it out of the air as a volley, as opposed to letting it bounce in front of you. But if they lob a lot, you might want to just put yourself in a more neutral stance and not be leaning forwards quite so much, so that you can be ready to move either forwards or backwards, depending on what they do with their return. The last thing I would like to say in response to your email, you say that sometimes you're shuffling or actually running through your first volley. And I just wanted to say that's okay as long as you're doing that in a balanced manner. If you're not in control of your body as you're doing that, then that's definitely going to be detrimental to the resulting shot. So get your split step in first before the shot actually starts coming towards you. Again, you should be split stepping as they make contact, so that as the ball is coming towards you after they've made their swing, you're able to change direction towards the ball, and you can move through your volley if you're doing so under control. But if you're still running forwards towards the net as they hit their shot, and you don't split step until the ball's already on its way, oftentimes the result is an unbalanced shot because you haven't had enough time to prepare yourself for the oncoming ball. And oftentimes players get rushed that way. If you're not balancing yourself before the shot is hit to you, then you probably won't be in balance. It's not going to be a comfortable volley. So it's okay to move through the first volley as long as you balance yourself first before the ball starts coming your way. Hopefully that makes sense. If I can help you at all further, Sally, please let me know. Thanks a lot for taking the time to write me that good question. That's a good topic and something that people should definitely understand. Okay, next up is a question from Jack Kripsack, Dr. Jack in New Jersey. He says, do you utilize Dartfish or any other biomechanics video software for player-student evaluations? Jack. Jack, I don't use Dartfish currently in my teaching, but I definitely want to in the future. I use video analysis as part of my teaching currently, but it's just a generic, just basically a video recording and editing program. It's not made specifically for analysis of sports. Dartfish, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a video recording software specifically for sports analysis, for technique analysis. And they make different versions for different types of sports. And it's extremely, extremely good software. And you're able to do side-by-side comparisons of, let's say, a previous forehand that you've hit. And right next to it, you can compare it to a forehand that you're hitting as you're trying to make technique changes. So you can see the difference between before and after, frame by frame. You can play them both together side by side. I've actually taken a golf lesson using this software, and it's great for that, being able to see yourself next to a professional making a correct swing. So I'd want to encourage all of you who have access to a good tennis professional who does video analysis. It's worth the money. If you have the extra money to spend, it is usually more expensive, but to see your actual swings is priceless. You hear myself talking about technique, and a lot of times in my own teaching, people think, "Oh yeah, I'm doing this right, I'm doing that right. I've been playing tennis for a long time, and so I'm sure, these fundamental things are, must be ingrained by now." And then we go and look at the video, and people oftentimes can't believe the types of things that they're doing in their technique. And, the video doesn't lie. So it's a great tool to see exactly what you're doing. And oftentimes in my own teaching using video, the biggest changes very often occur while using the video analysis, because people are able to immediately see, okay, that's what I'm doing. It didn't feel that way, but obviously I am doing that. And it's very easy to see when a change is made, when it's correct. It's obvious in the video. It's not always obvious just trying to feel it out on your own. You have to be extremely aware to know exactly what's going on with your own swing. You would think it can't be that hard to know exactly what you're doing, but until you see yourself on video, you really don't know exactly what's going on with that swing, no matter which one it is. So in the future, I'd love to use Dartfish Jack. I actually have a copy of the software, but they don't make a Macintosh version. I use Apple computers. So eventually I'll probably have to get a PC laptop just to run that. Thanks for the question, Jack. And I'm looking forward to possibly having you on the show next week. I'll be in contact with you. Okay, our last listener question for today comes from Steve, and he has a question about hitting an inside-out forehand. Steve writes and says, "Ian, great podcast this week. I was wondering if you could discuss the inside-out forehand on your next podcast. I can hit this shot pretty well from the backhand corner, usually putting it deep in the court, but I struggle with hitting that fantastic-looking Federer-like shot from inside the baseline that loops up and lands near the service line on my opponent's court. My setup for the shot is to make sure I give myself plenty of room between myself and the ball, use an extreme semi-Western grip, and get a good knee bend. It seems like I see photos... He says, it seems like I see the pros almost catch the ball a little bit farther back than the usual forehand. What is the key to getting the proper amount of topspin? Am I hitting the ball too hard? Perhaps you could discuss the fundamentals of hitting the shot. Thanks a lot and have a great weekend. Steve." Well, Steve, good question and well laid out. You have some good thoughts in there. First of all, let me talk about your comments. You said that it looks like the pros oftentimes hit a little bit farther back than usual when they're hitting this shot. For those of you who aren't familiar with the term inside-out forehand, that refers to a forehand that you hit on your backhand side. So if you stand right in the middle of the baseline, your backhand side is to your left. It means that you move to your left around the ball. The ball is coming to your backhand side, but over to your left on the ad side of the court. Rather than take a backhand, an inside-out forehand is when a player moves around the ball, past it to the left, in order to hit a forehand on their backhand side of the court. And inside-out refers to inside, meaning you're hitting your inside stroke, your forehand, on your backhand side. And the out part means that you're hitting cross-court. You're hitting out to the outside of the court. So you're hitting cross-court over to the ad side of your opponent's side. That's an inside-out forehand. A forehand on your backhand side, hit out cross-court the way you would normally hit a backhand cross-court, but you're using a forehand instead. Now, Steve is asking specifically about hitting a sharper angle with this shot, meaning not driving it deeply into the court, into the corner cross-court, but rather trying to put it away by hitting more of a short angle and aiming for the side tee where the service line meets the single sideline. And this is a great shot to have. It's a very aggressive and offensive shot to hit. And you see the pros hit this all the time. He mentions Federer. Pretty much every pro has this shot. And as much as possible, most pros are trying to hit their stronger side, which is typically their forehand, just like most of us recreational players. Now, let's talk first about your comment, Steve, about hitting a little bit farther back. Where you make contact with a ground stroke in terms of making contact in front or making contact behind you, that is a function of right and left in terms of where your shot is going to go. When you make contact well in front of your body with a forehand, the ball is going to go cross-court naturally. It's going to go to the left. So when you're over on the deuce side of the court hitting a forehand, if you want to hit cross-court, making contact well in front of your body is going to angle your strains to the left. Just hold your racket with a forehand grip, nice and relaxed, and just put your racket out in front of you with your arm and your hand, and you'll see your strains are angled to the left. Now, the opposite of that is true if you're trying to hit inside out. If you're trying to hit from left to right and hit an inside out forehand, your contact point should be a little bit farther back. And that's what gets the strains facing to the right in order to hit that inside out shot towards your opponent's ad side side of the court. So that has nothing to do with the topspin. That has everything to do with where the ball is going to be angled, right or left, not up and down. Topspin is created by how much up and down is in the swing, or rather down and then up. The racket comes down first and then swings upwards. That's how you create spin, is with a vertical swing. So making contact farther back is pushing the ball out to the right. That's what gives the angle. The farther back in your stance you let the ball come before you make contact, the sharper angle to the right is going to be produced, all other things being equal. You can deviate from that, but in general, that's going to be the case. Now, your second question is, what is the key to getting the proper amount of topspin? Am I hitting the ball too hard? Essentially, yes, you are hitting the ball too hard. If you're hitting this out, if you're driving it deep in the court instead of hitting a short angle, then yes, you are driving the ball more than you're spinning the ball. When you hit forwards and you drive the ball, it's going to carry deep in the court. And that's a good thing. It's good to hit the ball deep in the court. It should be the starting point for everybody who wants good ground strokes should be to learn how to hit the ball deeply and strongly into the court. What Steve is asking about here is more of an advanced shot. Now he's talking about adding extra spin to dip the ball down shorter in the court so that he can hit a sharper angle. The sharper angle you try to hit in the court, the less amount of court you have to work with. When you aim from corner to corner, you have a lot of space. when you aim from one corner to the sideline, if you're aiming for the side tee, that takes away a lot of room. It adds angle to your shot, so it becomes a good shot. It pulls your opponent off the court. They have to run farther to get to it, but it's less court for you to aim for. So that means we need extra topspin to dip the ball into the court to make it land inside the lines. So, Steve, to get the proper amount of topspin, you need more vertical swing in order to curve the ball down into the court. The way that they're able to hit this shot is by swinging upwards more than they're swinging forwards. There's a ratio in how every ground stroke is struck. If you're trying to hit the ball deeply in the court and drive it, you want to swing forwards strongly to drive the ball and to give it good pace forwards using your core. If you want to spin the ball and dip it or curve it down into the court and you want to hit a sharp angle or hit a sharply curving shot down towards your opponent's feet if they're at the net, then you need a lot of upward swing. That's what causes topspin, is a sharp, aggressive upward swing. And so what you need to learn to do is get your contact point a little bit farther back to get the ball going to the right more. And you need to learn to close your face a little bit more, get your racket face a little bit more closed, a little bit more angled downwards, so that you can swing upwards more aggressively and create a sharp curve in the ball. We want the ball to go upwards and then immediately curve downwards back into your opponent's side so that you can hit this shot, which is less room, less court. We need the ball to curve sharply because there's not a lot of court to work with as compared to hitting the ball deeply into the opposite corner. So that's it. That's pretty much it. To hit this shot, you need to hit a little bit farther back in your stance to hit the ball to the right, and you need to swing upwards more aggressively to get the extra topspin to keep it inside the lines as you try to hit this more aggressive angle to angle the ball off into your opponent's backhand side. That's how you hit a sharp inside-out forehand from the baseline, or you say a little bit inside the baseline. If you have, hopefully all that makes sense to you, Steve. I've just discussed in detail the basics and the essentials of how this shot is going to be possible. If you have further questions on specific, smaller technique type things, let me know. But I pretty much just went over everything you need to do in order to hit this shot. Now, your face needs to be a little more closed. The angle of your swing needs to be more upwards and not so much forwards, because we're not trying to drive this shot, we're trying to curve this shot. And so it needs to be a quick upward swing, an aggressively hit upward swing, to get the curve in the ball necessary to actually make this shot at a sharp cross-court angle. Get out there, Steve, and practice this shot. Either just drop forehands to yourself for a while and keep on swinging until you get the right trajectory with the ball. If the ball doesn't curve, if you hit the ball and it's going straight, just barely over the net and just barely landing inside the line, that's not what you want, because that's going to be too tough to make consistently. You want the ball to be curving so that you can hit this consistently in the court without making a lot of mistakes and giving your opponent a lot of points. So go ahead, just drop a bunch of forehands to yourself standing from the ad side, a little bit inside the baseline, and experiment with different swings until you find the right shot, until you find the curve of the ball that's correct to keep it in play consistently. Steve, write me back if you have any further questions. Thanks a lot. This was a great question, and I enjoyed answering that. It's a good technique question, and hopefully that helps you fully understand what you need to do in order to successfully hit this shot. Let me know if you have anything further, please. Okay, that's all the technique questions I had for this week. Just real quickly, I want to share a couple of positive and encouraging comments from listeners. Here's a quick one from John T. in California. John wrote this week and said, "Just wanted to let you know I really enjoyed your last podcast with Dr. Kripsak. As a listener, I would welcome him again as a guest. He provided some good information and a nice change of pace from the other podcasts. Incidentally, I also received my free set of strings today. Can't wait to try them when I replace my current strings. Thanks again, John from California. Well, thanks, John. I got a lot of positive feedback about Dr. Kripsak, and like I said earlier in the podcast, I look forward to having him back. And here we have a quick note from Dean. Dean had a question last week about being a little more confident and starting to go for more shots at the net in his doubles play. He wrote this week and says, "Hi, Ian. Thanks for your advice on making things happen at the net. In my matches, there typically are returns which are reachable at the net, but I often hesitate when they're fast, and by then it's too late. I'm going to work on poaching more of these shots, and I'll let you know what happens. By the way, I think Dr. Kripsak makes an excellent addition to your podcast, and I hope he continues to contribute to the show. It's great to hear him discuss specific case studies that support his advice. I'm excited to see your website grow in leaps and bounds every week. Keep up the great work." Well, thank you, Dean. I appreciate the comments, and thank you for the feedback. And I'd love to hear from more of you guys if you find that things that I'm doing are helpful, or if you have suggestions for possibly other features of the website or the podcast, definitely let me know. The website and the podcast, these are all things that I'm doing for you guys. This is for the benefit of tennis enthusiasts, and if you're listening to this podcast, this is done for you. And so if you have any feedback or any encouraging words, or if you have any suggestions on what could make it better, just head on over to the website and let me know. I love hearing back from people, and I respond to every email I get. So let me know what you think.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, that brings episode number 13 of the Essential Tennis Podcast to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today, whenever you might be listening to this podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to download the file and to listen. Hopefully it's been helpful to you and your game. If anything that I said during the podcast sounds like something that you need to work on, get out there and practice. Make sure that you understand it and what you're trying to accomplish. Take that information, get out and practice, and that's how you improve your game. It only takes changing one or two things to move you up a level in tennis, and so you can do it. You can improve your tennis by getting this good advice and by putting it into your game and making it a new good habit. So let me encourage you guys that, you know, keep up the good work. Everybody who's listening and writing in questions, keep it up. You guys are all doing great. You're improving your tennis. And I'm proud of everybody who's you know, they're into their tennis enough to take the time to invest both in asking me questions and in listening and then in practicing. This is how you get better. So great job, everybody. Thanks for another great week. And get over to the website and send me your questions so that I have some more great content for the podcast next week, episode number 14. Thanks very much. Have a great week, everybody. Take care. And good luck with your tennis.